Hello, and welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast. I'm Margaret Katz-Kann, and I'm here with my friend and intrepid warrior, David Landuli. Hey, David.
Hey, Margaret.
And today we're going even a little more off script than usual as we have a guest. And we're pivoting a tiny bit from some of the personal development and leadership topics that we sometimes talk about and doing something a little bit more grounded in the nonprofit and fundraising and leadership space for today. And we are lucky to have a guest today. We've got Graham Watt, and he is one of the principals at Anthem Creative, and he is one of those interesting people whose history has straddled the nonprofit world and currently sort of the marketing and communications for-profit world. Welcome, Graham. We're happy to have you.
Thanks so much, Margaret. This is exciting. Happy to be here.
Yeah, and Graham was Graham and I had a conversation a couple months ago, and he used this phrase, the Great Collision, to talk about nonprofits who sometimes are very late adopters of technology, and the collision being that mindset along with the explosion of exciting or terrible, depending on your perspective, technological things that are all kind of happening right now. And we thought this would be a great topic for our listeners in the nonprofit world to be invited to think about this space of potential conflict. So I know, Graham, you have a few things that make up that great collision. So tell us more.
Yeah, there's so much here, and I know we have a short conversation. I guess one of the questions that I often lead with in this is to ask the question, will tomorrow be more digital than it is today? And if the answer to that question is yes, then I think, and I think it's undeniably yes, then how we look at digital and how we treat it as leaders of organizations really is paramount. I think a good follow-up question to that is the trend accelerating or not? And I think the acceleration of digital adoption in emerging technology is accelerating at a rate that is pretty staggering and really hard to even stay on top of. And so that can be intimidating, it can be scary. And then the third question in that is that trend likely to continue or slow down? And I think that trend is going to continue to accelerate over time. So it's easy to be intimidated by all of these topics. It's easy to be, unsure of what the implications are and to want to just sort of put your head down and do what you've always done. But I think that's a fundamental mistake and error when it comes to leading an organization through what I call the Great Collision and the digital revolution. And so, the digital revolution has been at work for some time now. I remember a decade ago when my brother and I started the agency, we were talking about social media and what are the implications of social media for nonprofits and should they be on Facebook and what does that mean? From my earliest days, running a grassroots nonprofit organization, that was really it. We built this movement and momentum on the back of tools like Facebook. Instagram wasn't even a thing at the time, and so the Great Collision is really these massive technological revolutions that each one of them in and of themselves would be really significant and monumental and worth paying attention to. But what's happening right now is they're all colliding with each other and stacking on top of one another. And so depending on who you talk to, there's different ways of categorizing these, but the big elephant in the room is kind of AI. That's the big daddy, the one that's really supercharging all the rest. And so it's probably no surprise that AI is going to be a big deal. It is already a big deal, and it's going to continue to be a big deal. So that's one stream of emerging technology. The other one is blockchain and digital currencies. And so the implications for fundraiser organizations is really significant. And in the United States now, you've got, a very crypto and digital asset friendly regime in the government. And so they're passing things like the Genius Act, which is providing, regulatory clarity and guidelines around use of digital assets, which is really accelerating the adoption of those things when it comes to stablecoin usage and things like that. And then stack on top of that the emergence of humanoid robotics and the robotics industry. And so this is a really interesting space. And, I'm starting to really just pull at that thread and go, what are the implications of that for the nonprofit sector and for fundraising organizations? And then you also have this whole world of biotechnology and lifespan and longevity. And so the expectation that, with those emerging technologies and with AI really leading that, what does that mean for the length of people's lives and how healthy we are and how long do we end up living? And there's all kinds of these wild projections, and it sounds like sci-fi, but you're having people talking about the end of all disease within a decade. And so what does that mean for the future of humanity and how long we're living and how long our retirements need to last? And I just don't know that the world is really ready for the collision of all of these things. And so when you take a humanoid robot that is powered by AI, that has the ability using AI agents to transact, autonomously with other AI agents using stable coins and digital currencies, and you have humans that are living far into their, hundreds, what does that actually mean? And how do we adapt to that? And how quickly is this all coming? And I think it's easy to sit here and go, this is going to be a 20-year kind of trajectory, but what if it isn't? What if, 5 years from now we start to see the impact of these things in a way that we're all going to be surprised by?
I mean, I'm sitting here with my head just, wanting to explode just a tiny bit thinking about some of these things. So, I'd love to just sort of go back to the beginning a little, because I feel like AI, like we all believe that's here, right? And it feels like right now the conversation for most people is it's a, like a personal relationship with AI. Do I use AI to get a medical diagnosis online or to help me edit, or am I, gasp using it to write something that I didn't author myself? I mean, it feels like there's such a this level of personal relationship with AI is the conversation. And I'd love to just to invite you, like, how do we take that and just apply at least that topic to a nonprofit organization? What are the conversations that nonprofits could be having about AI right now and maybe aren't?
Yeah, there's lots. It depends a lot on the nature of the organization and what you actually do as an organization. So I think there are lots of applications of AI within, the programmatic side of what an organization does. I think, let's be honest, I think it's still very early, and anyone who's dabbled in AI, and is trying to figure out how do I use this at work. So yes, there's, the personal use cases of using it to build a fitness plan or to, develop a menu and do your grocery shopping lists and those things. We're finding efficiencies, on the personal side of things. My 12-year-old is actually writing a novel right now, using AI. And just last night, sitting with him, and he's writing paragraph after paragraph in the prompts, and then using AI to actually write it out. And he's using it to design the cover and do all of that. And so he's exploring this, in terms of creativity and, taking these wild stories he has in his brain and using AI as a writing partner to do that at 12 years old, which is pretty amazing. I think when it comes to nonprofit organizations, a lot of the efficiencies currently and where the tools are working well is in automating away some of the more administrative work and using it for things like data analysis and running your donor database through an AI tool and allowing AI to do some of that difficult work of identifying which donors are maybe most likely to lapse, and how do we do a better job of engaging certain donors, which ones can we reach out to for upgrade conversations, and what does that mean? I think one of the things we're having conversations with a lot of our clients around is, solving some really chronic challenges for nonprofit organizations. You've worked in the space long enough to know that one of the pain points that just about every organization faces is the mission is large and the resources are few, and you're trying to do more with less, and everyone is, stretched in multiple directions. People are wearing multiple hats and budgets are thin. And so I think there's an incredibly powerful promise with AI to be able to take some of the low-level tasks and automate them and use AI in lots of different capacities in order to improve the efficiency and the effectiveness of an organization to effectively, I think, free up the time of your people and your staff and increase the capacity of your organization as a whole without the need to increase your headcount and hire additional people. So I think that's a really compelling use case and one that nonprofits should be really exploring and looking at. And there's a whole other realm of content creation and design and video production. The tools are still very early for that, and I do get concerned a little bit when nonprofits start talking about using AI to generate video content. I think at the end of the day, there's an opportunity for nonprofits, and our encouragement and challenge to our clients is to use this as an opportunity to become more human. And what I mean by that is, fundraising is still a deeply human process. And people give to people that they know, like, and trust, and they give to organizations that they care about and that align with their values. And so if you can take the low-level administrative work and automate that using AI to free up people's time in order to engage in deeper relationships and conversations with supporters and constituents, I think there's a lot of value that can be created there using AI.
Bane of every fundraiser's existence, call reports and getting them into the system. I'm sure there's a way of helping like that. Since you're there's a tool out there that could be created that would really sell fast if it isn't already out there. Being able to take handwritten notes or voice recorded notes, and then just converting them into a digital file and uploading them into the database. I think that would be an effective, from a productivity and efficiency standpoint for fundraisers on the front lines, that would be a great application. I'm sure it can be done. You get out of the meeting, instead of writing your notes down, boom, you hit the digital record, it goes into a file, you upload the file, it converts it into text, and it gets, you have to always check it. Our experience, Margaret and I, with the podcast here, which we're recording, so it is, I mean, these AI, the early AI models were large language models, so they're really good with language, except they're not perfect with language. So, we'll get a summary of this conversation, and I'll touch it up a little bit, and then put it into a format that can be pushed out ultimately into the text summary, and that goes along with the audio file. But then Margaret will have to put her writing hat on and really, like you had mentioned, your son is using AI for writing a novel, and so Margaret will put her creative human touch to those notes, and for a human audience, not for a digital language model. And there are lots of errors also, I notice, even in the note-taking summary, although it's a pretty good start. Margaret would say it's a pretty shitty start, but she is like on a whole another level of writing than I am. So there are things like that off the top of my head that I could see, as you say, Graham, freeing up more time. It is for some frontline fundraisers, this is just not a, it's an essential thing to do, but it's more for posterity than like the conversations in the in that fundraiser's head, whether they put it into notes and put it into a system, that's for the posterity of the nonprofit, not so much for the individual. So this would help individual fundraisers. So I could imagine something like this, if it's not already in use, being widely adopted. It's And
interesting too.
I'm really hearing from Graham, which I love to, is using some AI to mine through your database and help, I mean, I know many of the databases claim to have that functionality, but who haven't we talked to in some period of time? And I think that's interesting. But what you're saying, David, which I think is such a great reminder for all of us, when we hire a new person, we don't really believe that we're going to give 100% of our tasks, right, to that person. It's more like, I don't know, in my experience, it was maybe 70% that they would do 70%, but 30% of oversight and help, helping to steer things as a manager was still on my plate. And I wonder if that's actually a good way to think of AI as well. You're
Yeah.
not offloading 100%.
Yeah, there's a management principle that's been around for a while, but the 10-80-10 rule, and we imply that we implement this a lot, in our leadership and within our agency. And I think that's probably the best way to approach AI at this stage too, is the 10-80-10, which means, you're at the front end as the human being, prompting the tool, telling it, what you want it to do, and giving it direction and instruction. Then allowing it to perform 80% of the work in the middle. And then you're coming back at the 10% on the tail end and polishing and tweaking and changing. And these are all the things that it misunderstood, didn't do quite right. So, but that versus having to do 100% of the task by yourself is where I think the productivity and the efficiencies can come from. I hear what you're saying too, David. Like, it's not great. It's not perfect. It's certainly not something you can just kind of let it do it on its own and it's going to check the box. I think one of the mistakes that we see a lot of people making is to say, oh, I tried it and it didn't work. And then they, have this narrative or this mental model that says, ah, the AI tools just are not going to be able to do what I need them to do. They're evolving and changing so rapidly. And so that might be true today, but in, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, that may be different. And when you look at how competitive the space is, how quickly it's moving, you have Elon Musk and the Grok team and the XAI team launching an update every few months, and you've got ChatGPT. All the large, frontier models are doing that, and they're trying to outperform one another, and the benchmarks just keep raising one after another. You also have, a lot of models that you can run independently, and so the cost of them is going down while also the effectiveness of the tools is going up. And so, I think it's a mistake to say, oh, I tried AI, it didn't work, and move on. I think it's to say, okay, it's not quite there yet. I still need to be involved, maybe 50%, and then over time, can I have AI do more of that work? And then it slides, from 50 to 40, 30, 20, and then eventually that 10% marker. So I think that's one of the ways of looking at it, is to say, even though it's not perfect, where can I find efficiency? There's another area, beyond just the administrative side of things that you're talking about, David, that I think is really compelling as well. And we're exploring this and actually looking to package this up and productize some things and bring them to market as well. But it's in this world of donor retention. I think it's one of the things that organizations are struggling with. Donor retention numbers have been steadily on the decline across the sector in the last number of years. My wife and I choose about four or five organizations to give to every year, and I'm consistently amazed at how poorly their kind of donor nurturing experience is. And I think there's this, and not just AI, but I think other technological tools that we're starting to play with and use that can do a much better job of, taking a new donor and nurturing them through that first 12 months and moving them from first gift to a second gift conversion and then upgrading to a recurring gift. And I think a lot of that now can be built, automated, and in a lot of ways, curated and personalized. So you can actually create these donor journeys that are really personalized, where you're putting the donor in the driver's seat and based on their preferences and asking them sentiment gathering questions that allow them to express, what they're interested in and what they want from you as an organization, and using automation and technology to curate the donor experience based on what they want so that you are increasing the likelihood of them continuing to stick with that organization. And I think that's one of the lowest hanging fruit opportunities when it comes to emerging technology is, donor journeys and retention. And if you're able to improve your retention, significantly using this, then the implications for a fundraising organization are really like astronomical.
Yeah, so I could see like two, at least two. I haven't really given much of this any thought other than right now. But it as more annual giving moves online, let's just say digital, there's probably a application place bot for that kind of re-engagement over an arc of an early donor's life, so as you say, so that could all be automated. I could envision that all being automated. They've interacted with you online digitally. The bot can interact with that person based on a rule set and based on some information that you might gather up front in the initial interaction or along the way. So all that is good. So that's one path for retention of annual donors, which can be those can really drop off because they're low value, and unless you have good systems and people in place to really nurture that. So I could see some benefit for that. I'm also imagining most of my work was in major gifts. I could imagine having had a tool that would prompt me to reach out to this donor, that donor, time for a stewardship call. Hey, have you checked in with so and so lately? I see that they were out in social media talking about this. And so I could also see some tools like that that would be very valuable for major gifts. The principal gifts level, again, those tools could be effective, but there you're talking about a very small handful of donors that are highly curated by human to human interaction. There might be some research that could be, augment that. Even on the major gift side, even on, I gotta imagine folks are already using research tools to uncover for prospecting, but maybe you could say a little bit more about these like three different approaches.
For sure. I think donor prospecting is definitely one of those areas, and being able to identify people that are most likely to align with an organization's cause and mission, and based on their, online patterns and behavior. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of data points that are floating out there in the internet about a user's or a donor's, activity and preferences. And so the ability to tap into that and, engage with new donors that you may not have reached out to or engaged with. One of the things that I'm really intrigued by, and we're starting to test out and play with as well, is the ability to qualify donors for major giving conversations. And so, you acquire new kind of micro donors through a campaign of some kind, and then can you take them on a journey that's curated and ask specific questions and gather data along the way that would qualify someone for a major gift conversation? So there is one particular tool that we're starting to implement and use that is really fundamentally transforming the way that digital storytelling happens for fundraising organizations. And it's kind of a whole new way of doing that. And so much of it is automated, but the data that you're gathering along the way in a really frictionless method is allowing organizations to be really specific and like methodical about how they're qualifying people for those major gift conversations. And a lot of it is using SMS and text messaging as well. And so recognizing that social media is such a crowded, noisy environment, email is still, the best performing tool we have available to us when it comes to digital fundraising. But, people's inboxes are more crowded than ever. And so breaking through in that can be more difficult. And when you start to look at the benchmarks year over year of open rates on email, and then click-through rates on email appeals, and then conversion rates on those as well, it drops off a cliff, right? And so we're starting to use tools that perform in a completely different way, using short form micro video content dripped out by SMS and text messages that perform at about an 80 to 90% completion rate in terms of people entering a content journey, consuming all the content, and interacting with you in the way that you want. So when you compare these new kind of methods and tools to more traditional tools like email, it's not even comparing apples to apples anymore. It's really night and day in terms of performance. So we're starting to really test these with our clients and roll these out and say, what would the implications be on, donor retention and the ability to qualify someone who gave a small gift in a digital environment over time for a major gift conversation, and having the software determine when that person is ready for an outreach, and then sending a notification to your major gifts officer, who can then send a text message that's personalized and say, I'm Stacy from such and such an organization. I'd love to tell you about our capital initiative we have coming up. So I think these are things that are possible in ways that they never have been before.
Yeah, as you're speaking, it's I'm just thinking again, because it's my point of like my personal relationship with AI, and that every time I have a conversation with somebody and they share how they're using it, Big light bulb, like, oh, one friend, I use it for shopping lists, and I told, here's my diet goals, and it generates a weekly menu and a shopping list. Never thought of that. Another person said, oh, you just have to tell Chat GPT, like, to be an endocrinologist with 2 decades of experience, and then ask your question about your lab result, and it will answer you, like, how to sort of qualify or use it for medical things. And then, the list goes on that I've learned all of these ideas from talking to people. And I don't feel like nonprofits in general do a really amazing job of sharing, with each other. So all of these applications are so interesting. And I just wonder, I don't know that anybody has an answer on this podcast, but like, what would it look like for some nonprofits to just be a little bit more generous about how we use AI, how it might be helpful as an industry for these groups to not feel in competition, but to, really have a more collaborative conversation about this.
And not to make this a plug in anyway, but I'm going to be launching a podcast in the next 6 months here, that's precisely that, having conversations with people on the front lines in the industry that are using technology in really unique and creative and productive ways, and then sharing their lessons and how are they using these technologies? What are the impact that they're seeing? Where are they getting big breakthroughs and wins? And then sharing that with others so that they can do the same. So I think you're absolutely right, that need for sharing. I mean, when I've got a number of stories, this one's fairly far out there, and people have a hard time wrapping their head around this as well. But I think there's actually implications for board governance and leadership within organizations as well. And we're starting to see early use cases of AI agents serving as advisors and even board members of nonprofit organizations. And so, when you have a treasurer that never makes mistakes, that never sleeps, and is at all your meetings because they're an AI agent, what's the value of that and the benefit of it? And the challenge often with boards is, how can we get them to fundraise? Well, what if you have, an army of AI agents that are actively involved in that? So this is a very like frontier emerging phenomenon, but there are use cases. This is already happening. There was one, and I've talked about this on some other podcasts, but an AI agent that on its own, this is an autonomous AI agent that was let loose on Twitter, on X, and started posting about biodiversity and about environmental conservation, and actually started fundraising for rainforest.org. And this then led to this kind of online interaction with rainforest.org and this AI agent, an autonomous AI agent, who had raised a bunch of money for their organization. And so now that AI agent is an ambassador for the organization and sits on a board of advisors. So these are really unique early use cases, but I think we're going to see this happening more and more as we move forward.
Feels a little like sci-fi right now, but I guess that's
Absolutely.
the problem. It feels like something that's like, no, that's not happening right now.
Well, depending on the sector too, right? Depending on the vertical within the industry, you're going to get, the impact will be higher or lower. I think, nonprofit organizations that are in the medical space and hospital foundations, organizations like that, in a lot of ways, they're going to start leveraging this technology much more effectively in their programmatic activity. When you look at seniors care and the ability to leverage, humanoid robots that are, they don't make mistakes. They're kind of, better performing employees than any nurse or practitioner that you can have. So again, what will the tolerance be for a senior to be cared for by an autonomous, AI agent in a humanoid robot? Time will tell, and those things are going to start being tested out. But these companies that are building humanoid robots, a lot of them are mass producing, and they're ready for public consumption within the next kind of 24 to 36 months. So we're going to see this. It's already happening in places like Japan and other parts of the world. And so one of the things that I wrestle with, and our team talks about quite a bit, there's often a feeling of loss and sadness that comes with this. The world as we know it is changing, and it is going away, and we don't know what this is going to look like, and it can be met with fear and hesitation and resistance. But I just don't know that there's any going backwards. And so I think there will be some organizations that philosophically kind of take a stance and are not willing to, replace certain human interactions with digital ones. But I think this is the trend that we're headed towards, and it's coming much faster than we realize.
I have so many directions I could go in, but some of them moral and some of them philosophical, but that's probably not the this is not the best place to have those conversations. As a I'll just say this. Terminator series. That's all I'm going to say. Okay. So if these are autonomous software and hardware systems, and they are programmed, at least initially by people, then they are not error-free, Graham. And just as human beings have the potential for good and evil, so do robots and software systems. So I will leave. All you have to do is watch the Terminator series and you'll see that. And but that said, I'm just curious because the bane of most fundraising leaders' existence is the annual gala or event. So can you share with the audience if there are any, is there any help? Because people who are really honest about this will tell you that their events, when they calculate the labor cost of putting on these events, the yield is not all that spectacular. It could be money losing, in fact. So I think this is an area that where AI could help. Have you had any insights on this? Have you been helping any clients with it?
Yeah, these are big conversations. I mean, when we, there's lots of different ways that we work with clients, but one of the ways is we get in the room, we go through these sprints, we call them, and we go through a four-part framework that we call strategic inevitability, and we map out 12 months of an organization's activity, particularly focused on marketing, communications, and fundraising. And we sometimes call ourselves the gala killers. We're big fans of saying, "Hey, repurpose
Yay!
that." So,
The
but
Gala
here's what I'll
Killers. You got to use that brand, man. I'm telling you, that is a winning brand.
And you're right, like, the juice isn't always worth the squeeze. I remember that, I learned that the hard way as an executive director and going, we put 3 months into planning this event and getting people in the room. And, when you actually extrapolate it out, you go, wow, well, the engagement was good and people feel, warm and fuzzy about the work that we do and more people know about it, but was it really worth it? And, there's just this kind of gray, area and question mark around that. Now, here's what I'll say. I'll kind of talk out of both sides of my mouth here. On the one hand, I think there's better ways of utilizing resources and time and utilizing tools and running digital campaigns in the place of a gala. So I think that's one of the things that we're often really excited about and having organizations sunset some of their legacy events and moving more towards digital and maybe reducing the number of events that they do in a year. We had one client that was doing 12 events in a year. We reduced that down to three and took, the increased capacity of the organization and poured that into digital campaigns instead, and had a calendar of annual campaigns on the digital side of things that was built around acquisition and engagement. So, I think those are definitely worth exploring. Here's what I will say on the flip side of that, though, as the world trends much more digital, much more rapidly than any of us can imagine, there are certain things that people will want and crave more than anything else, and that is this human connection. Like, as human beings, we're just wired for human connection. And the more we've seen this with social media over the years, you see it with, with Gen Z and Gen Alpha, this sense of disconnection from one another that is only going to grow and increase. And so I think we're going to see a huge resurgence in live events. We're going to see a huge sort of, swing in the other direction towards face-to-face human interaction and contact. And I think that's where those events may play a role. Will they increase the fundraising performance of an organization? I don't know. But I think there's going to be a place and there's going to be room for them in a new way. But I think it's going to be more about reinventing those events and changing the expectations around them. One of the things that we are in the early stages of testing with some of our clients is how can you increase the ROI of that event? And so, you've got 600 people in a room and everything hinges on that moment. It hinges on the appeal and how many people put their hand up and write you a check. What if you could take the, 90% of people that don't give at the event and engage them using digital tools and technology post-event so that you're extending the experience outside of that event and then capturing value post-event and able to actually attribute and have, you know, data that quantifies that for you. Because, you know, you're going to have a lot of people that walk out of the room. It's not that they don't love the organization or intend to give. It's just that their spouse wasn't there, or it wasn't the right moment for them, or they needed to have a conversation with their accountant before they moved some money around. So I think that's one of the things that we're seeing is actually, if you're not ready to do away with your annual gala, then plugging tools in that extend the value of the event and bring people into a digital interaction post-event that increases the return on investment and has more value long
I
term.
love that. That is very exciting. If there was something that we've covered a lot of ground, if there was something that you would invite the audience to try or right now, what would it be?
Oh, I think there's two things that I'll say. One is I'm surprised at how often we engage with a new client, a new organization. Often, you know, mid to large size organizations that we assume are more sophisticated than they often are. And we look under the hood and ask the question, you know, about their digital strategy, and often we're met with blank stares. And it's like, what do you mean a digital strategy? What is that? And whether that's a digital strategy in terms of communications and donor engagement and nurturing, or if it's a digital fundraising strategy, often that isn't there. And so this is my kind of passionate plea to organizations. That's what I was saying at the very outset of this conversation. The world tomorrow will be more digital than it is today, and that will continue to be true. And so it is absolutely vital that organizations have a digital strategy and that they, you know, they staff to that, that they invest in it, and that they're willing to build in that direction. The second piece was maybe more practical and just even an anecdote from our company and our team. We've implemented something recently, and I'll say this, you can imagine as a creative agency, one of the things that AI is coming to disrupt is creative services. And so when it comes to design, when it comes to developing websites, when it comes to film production, AI tools are coming that are able to do all of those things. And so we're having a bit of an existential conversation about, you know, what's our role and how do we adapt and how do we pivot? So one of the things that we've done to reduce fear within our agency and our team and to increase productivity and to encourage familiarity and exploration and curiosity around AI and how we could leverage it and utilize it instead of being afraid of it is to implement something that we call AI Hour. And so we basically mandated that all of our team spend 1 hour per week using AI and exploring it within the specific realm of their job function. And so there's really three requirements for that. One is that they, you know, spend that hour doing research. So either researching AI specific tools for their particular job function, learning about AI for, you know, call it design or filmmaking or copywriting. And then the second piece is that they spend some of that time actually playing with tools and exploring them and creating things with those tools. And so, you know, don't just learn about them, but actually use them and start to see what are the boundaries of their capabilities? Where are the areas where they fall short? We found again and again that, oh, you know, our designers, for example, it's like, we don't have to be afraid of these tools because you still need a human who knows design to tell it what it needs to create. You still need that subjectivity and that skill set to be able to get world-class design out of an AI tool. And so they're feeling more comfortable and confident using those tools, starting to create things using those tools, which is increasing their speed, the efficiency, and the profitability of our agency. And then the third piece is sharing. And so we have our staff share what are they using, what are they reading, what are they creating, and you know, actually have a Slack channel where they're putting those things in on a weekly basis, saying, look, this is, you know, a new tool that I'm playing with, or here's something that I created using a tool. And so they're, you know, getting excited and sharing that with the rest of the team, and we're celebrating our wins and our failures and what we're learning along the way. So those are some of the ways that we're going about this. And I think that's a really valuable exercise for nonprofits is to say, you know, here's a new program, whatever you want to call it. You can call it AI hour, you can call it anything you need to, but encouraging staff to spend time, you know, within their week playing with tools that are related to their specific job function And then I think the other piece that we're looking to implement is actually an AI budget. So going back into our budget and including an AI budget line where we're actually budgeting for AI tools, because there are free
Well,
tools available.
that would link up to your first suggestion, which is first have a digital strategy, and then as
That's it.
part of that, have
That's
a
it.
digital budget.
Have a budget that goes
Well,
alongside that as well.
all right, Graham. Well, bring us home, Margaret.
Well, I just want to say thank you, Graham, for adding a little bit of warmth and texture to a subject that I think for many people it just kind of takes their breath away. It feels very scary and just intimidating. So thank you for that
Well,
conversation.
and if this conversation took your breath away, I know it did mine, and was a little scary for me, then I guess you can reach out to Graham, because we're going to put how to get in touch with him in the show notes, right, Margaret?
I was just gonna say we'll
Oh.
make sure that y'all can find Graham if you want to. Well, yeah, we'll
All
get
right.
him.
Well, I think that's it for this time.
Thanks so
Thanks
much,
for
David.
being.
Thanks. See you next time.